And here we are on overtime. Welcome to everybody. Manuel here, Kyle, and Rob Gila, I see you over there. There's Alex.
You are here.
Yo.
All right. I think everything went smoothly. Okay. Now, this slight admonition. We want people to call us. That's the reason we do off the hook overtime. And we have to struggle to get phone calls. So please give us a call at 802-321-4225. I mean, you don't want to just hear us talking more. We want to go back and forth. Tell us about your vaccination experience or your experience trying to get an appointment or your backup strategies that you believe in. Whatever it is, to participate like we used to when there wasn't a pandemic and we went to the radio station and we took phone calls live on the air constantly. We want to do that again. We will do that again. But this is the best we have right now. So for us to continue doing overtime, we would like to get people participating. 802-321-4225. And Alex, you're not even in the room. It's not exactly a ringing endorsement of what I'm saying here when you walk away. There he is. He's back.
I'm here.
Okay.
I was just, dealing with a wood-burning stove simultaneously, but
why?
I'm listening.
Why would you be doing that during a radio show? We just did a story about a whole data center burning down.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. Trust me, that thought didn't cross my mind, but...
Were you burning Ethernet cables?
That's right. They let off a really pleasant smell.
By the way, Rob, can you verify that we are, in fact, on YouTube? Because sometimes we forget to hit a button and things don't work.
We are indeed.
Okay,
we are on YouTube, we are hearable, and we are waiting for those phone calls.
All right, we are waiting for the phone calls. 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. Is our telephone number. So, folks, we had to cut the Gab conversation short a little bit. So, did anybody have anything, any further points they wanted to make?
I mean, just the fact that, like, I have a few friends who run like federated social media services, on their own Steam with their own admin skills, and these are smaller sites, of course, but they just seem so much better at it than the seditionists and traitors in charge of Gab. So I've got to take my hat off to those people who are running their own Mastodons or other federated services, or even just hosting their own little sites and forums and things, and doing a better job of it than the main home of terrible people.
Well, not to make excuses for white supremacists, which I try not to do, but they're busy. They're busy trying to take down democracy. They don't really have time to learn security and to run a social networking site effectively. So my advice, hire someone else to do that for you. And if nobody will work for you, maybe look at what you're doing, Maybe that's the lesson here. Hey, we have a phone call? Okay, great. Let's take this phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hi.
How you doing? Go ahead.
I wanted to tell you, since you asked, about getting my shot.
Oh, I remember you called a few weeks ago, and we were walking you through the system, and now you got your shot. That's awesome.
Well, it was quite a challenge. I was giving out my personal information to total strangers in the hopes that they could get me something. And then finally I got up one morning and I was heading towards the bathroom, but I checked TurboVax, which you remember you did that program on TurboVax.
Absolutely.
And there was a huge number of Javits Center appointments, and I looked at that had been put on 7 minutes before I checked, and I went to the first page, and I looked at the column that said how many slots were open, and I chose the time slot that had the largest number, like 45. Because I had problems before, which you remember my telling you about.
Right.
And I went through it as quickly as I could, and I said I didn't have insurance, so that I wouldn't be asked my birth date again and be rejected because they didn't like my birth date, no matter how I formatted it. And once I had the appointment, I went back, and I did it again and said, yes, I do have insurance, and this is my insurance. And I got in the same day, same time slot, and of course I canceled.
I was about to ask. Make sure you canceled the one that you didn't go.
Of course, okay. I did, and I also canceled the ones in late March and early April that other people tried to get for me. Because the one I got was, you know, the dump came on Thursday, and the appointment was for Friday.
Wow.
The very next
Amazing.
Day.
That is awesome.
But I also have to report that Thursday evening, it was Thursday morning that the dump came and I got my appointment. Thursday evening, a man was randomly attacked in Chinatown. A mentally ill person stabbed him in the back, and people were thinking that it was a hate crime. However, particularly because the guy who did it said, I did it because I didn't like the way he looked at me, and he said it was said anti-Asian things. But the camera footage of the actual crime showed that he stabbed them in the back, and he never even saw his victim's face. So he didn't even know whether the person was Asian or not, let alone, you know, there was no looking at him and, you know, didn't like the way the person looked at him. The person never looked at him.
How does this relate to your vaccination?
Huge Ma, the man who created TurboVax, was extremely upset at this happening to an Asian man in Chinatown, along with all the other anti-Asian hate, and felt that his family and friends were threatened, and he shut down TurboVax for 48 hours from Friday noon, no, Saturday noon to Monday noon, trying to publicize this and ask for action from allies. And I had gotten my appointment and my shot. But had the timing been just a tiny bit different, I would have been one of the people who was hurt by missing out.
Absolutely. And it goes to what we were saying earlier about how stupidity can reign. And it's exactly that kind of a thing that can derail everyone's good efforts, because what TurboVax is doing is an incredible service that has helped so many people, and for them to feel like they're being threatened, that's just unacceptable on so many levels.
Well, I wanted to encourage you to give some airtime on Off the Hook. Next chance you get, you're going to be off the next 2 weeks,
We're not going to be on, because we can't do radio on St. Patrick's Day, so we're not going to be on next week, but we will be on in 2 weeks.
Well, in 2 weeks, I would like to encourage you to do a follow-up of your coverage of Huma and TurboVax to mention this. He has information at the top of encouraging people to learn more about anti-Asian hate and talking about this incident and his reaction to it. And, you know, I would like to encourage you to help fight against anti-Asian hate.
Yeah, it sounds like a great idea. And I think we should focus more time on what they are doing, their efforts. Now, TurboVax, correct me if I'm wrong, they basically, it's the New York metropolitan area, right? It doesn't go beyond that?
Pretty much. Let's see, I've got TurboVax. I still have the tab open on my computer, because it makes me feel good to be able to see that there are more appointments being put out there. Even though I personally don't need them anymore, and, you know, I'd be willing to help other people. It's got Bronx, Long Island, Manhattan, it's Queens. Here's one upstate, Westchester County Center, upstate, has got some. So it goes a little bit beyond.
Well, it's amazing to see what has been accomplished in that period of time, and this is only one region. I'm sure there are other TurboVax type systems that exist in other parts of the country. We'd like to know more about that as well. What's going to happen, though, over the next few weeks, what we're told is that the vaccine is going to become more and more available. In fact, there might even be more of it than people will be registering for, and that will cause another problem, having to convince people to get the vaccine. People will say, oh, it's here, I don't have to worry about it right now. No, you do have to worry about it. The smart thing to do is to get vaccinated so that this thing goes away and we can resume our normal lives. It's as simple as that.
The problem, a problem is as more people become vaccinated and more vaccine becomes available, they're opening it up to more people, which means that people who have been having difficulty getting an appointment are now struggling further against more competition.
Right. Well, the solution to that, obviously, is to have more sites available where people can get it and also to expand the hours. I understand Javits now is 24 hours. You can get a vaccination at 3:30 in the morning if that works for you. So I know that doesn't work for everybody, but that definitely helps.
There are people who are either their second or third shift or they are just plain desperate.
I mean,
why wouldn't, you know, if you can get vaccinated and get your life saved at 3:30 in the morning and you can get there, why wouldn't you? It's life or death.
Absolutely. Hey, congratulations. What was the actual vaccine like when you got it? Did that go smoothly?
I barely felt the needle. I always ask people giving me vaccines to do the plunger super slowly so that my bodily fluids have plenty of time to get out of the way of the new stuff coming in. But it was a pain-free vaccination. I barely felt the needle coming in. The feeling of it was by no means, not even a tiny bit painful.
And may I ask which vaccine did you get, if I can ask?
I got Pfizer.
Pfizer, yes!
We're
all getting Pfizer, Alex. You're the only Moderna around.
At the Javits Center, you get Pfizer during the day, and you get Johnson & Johnson during the night.
Okay. It's just a little friendly competition, that's all. I don't mean anything by it. So I'm not mocking you, Alex. But you are the only one that's different.
Well, you know, I like to stand out.
you certainly do. Caller, thank you so much. Congratulations on getting it. I hope, make sure you go back in 3 weeks. And
of course, I have a terrible problem to face. I'm supposed to, I'm playmastering, I'm probably the first and probably the last person ever who's going to try to do a Zoom play reading of Peer Gynt on Ibsen's birthday, and that's a massive undertaking. It's got like 87 roles, and it's like 5 hours long, and it's scheduled for the day after my shot, my second shot. So if I get knocked out by the shot,
it'll just be a different interpretation.
Well, you know, it has been suggested to me I should maybe delay getting my shot by a couple.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. Get the shot when you're supposed to get it, and everything else will fall into place.
I hope so.
As a theater guy myself, I just want to
get some reaction.
Go ahead, Rob.
Sorry, as a theater guy myself, I just want to point out that you would not be the first person to get out there on the boards while suffering some sort of medical anomaly that affects your performance, but I'm sure you'll do wonderfully regardless.
I'm playmastering, so I have to make sure everything goes smoothly. So if I'm entirely incapacitated, that would be a problem.
Yeah, and then people realize how much you're needed, so it works either way. Mm-hmm.
Well, set yourself up as best you can so that you maximize the possibility of not having having as little a response as possible. But also, you know, do what you're passionate.
Response, so I know it's working.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Right, there you go.
I'm liable to be one of the 5% that it doesn't actually.
No, that's not the amount of people that get it, that get the vaccine. That number goes down even more. It's a lot of math involved, but believe me, the disease will disappear and people will not get infected anymore if we reach herd immunity. That's the goal. Anyway, listen, thanks for updating us. Congratulations on getting the vaccination, and please keep us informed in future weeks.
Thank you.
Take care.
And don't forget Huge Ma.
No.
And the Asian hate stamping out.
Absolutely not. Yes.
Thanks for your call.
And our phone number again is 802-321-4225. I'm glad you got the shot. I know we were walking her through it a few weeks ago. And it just, you know, seemed like she was having a lot of difficulty registering on the site, and but she did it. She did it, and boy, you know, the help that people are giving to others, I think is simply amazing. You know, specifically, can we give more information as to how the service she used and how people can access that?
Yeah, TurboVax, as we've spoken about before, you can go to turbovax.info, which has all the info on there, and you can also go to TurboVax on Twitter, which is TurboVax. And that is an example of people helping people, because this was an effort put together by an independent programmer who happened to be someone who was capable of setting something like this up. And the fact that the person who set this up then had to interrupt the service with news of what was going on in their community, it's heartbreaking, but it's also, I would say, it's understandable, because when you've got that kind of platform and you need to get your feelings out there about it, you know, that's something to do. But, like, yeah, turbovax.info, and it's what Gila and I used to get our appointments.
I think there's actually the same info dump that we also registered for our vaccines,
and it is just a running feed of appointments that open up throughout the New York metropolitan area, upstate, Long Island, all of that, and you can see minute by minute the appointments that are opening up near you.
Clarify upstate, though. I don't think upstate. Upstate is an open question.
Oh.
But no, it actually, TurboVax made me tear up earlier today, because 33,000 appointments at the Javits Center opened up earlier today, and I burst into tears.
Yeah.
Because this is actually happening.
Uh-huh. It is actually happening.
It was an amazing moment.
To me, the amazing moment was actually going there and just seeing hundreds of people all there for the same reason and hundreds of other people helping them. It just felt like community. It felt like, you know, we're battling this thing, we're going to win, and we're going to be strong, and we're going to be supportive. And that's what people need to feel.
The other thing that it really reminded me of, and, you know, had conversations about this with several people, is that with all the lines and all the regimentation and all the documentation, it seemed like the airport. But when we got married, Rob said that the marriage bureau was like the happy DMV, because it was, you know, bureaucracy and forms to fill out, but everybody was really happy to be there. So in the same way, the Javits Center kind of felt like the happy airport, because everybody was standing in line and waiting to get this done, but everybody was really excited to be there. It was a happy airport.
Can I just speak about the DMV, though, for a moment? The DMV in the pandemic, I don't know if this is just me, but they seem to get so much better. I mean, there's a local office that you can drop off forms. There are people who come outside. They answer all your questions. They're very pleasant. And then if there are any issues, you call a number and you speak to a person, an actual human being. And I think I'm speaking to somebody in their home who basically was bending over backwards to help to make sure that everything was okay. I've never had an experience like that at the real DMV. So in a way, I think the pandemic might have humanized the Department of Motor Vehicles a little bit.
Yeah, that's really interesting because it's one of the many ways in which this pandemic has forced us all to rethink things that we just took as sort of necessary evils or necessary hassles in life, like going to the DMV in the normal schleppy fashion, or like going into the office, 5 days a week for 40 hours when a lot of your job can be done effectively from home, sometimes all of your job for some people. And we're going to come out of this pandemic with a whole new understanding of like how we could better be doing the routine things that we all have to do.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Kyle?
Yeah, it's not all the same, but there are probably attributes of working from home that people who work in places like the DMV maybe enjoy a little bit more. And to that end, perhaps when they're on the clock, when they're helping customers, really think about their job a little bit, take a little bit more pride in it because of the accommodation or at least the relative comfort. But I don't want to make that as like a blanket statement because I know that's not true, and nothing about virtual like customer service mm-hmm. or answering calls and managing home life can realistically, I think, be that much of a virtue. I don't want to sing its praises all over the place.
It's more because I think people are seeing others as human beings. And when you talk to that person on the phone who's working for DMV, you see them as a person going through the same thing you're going through. And, you know, that's why you say stay safe to everybody these days on the phone, in person, because we're looking out for each other. So you see the person who works at DMV as a human being facing the same challenges. And I'm hoping that when it's over, we keep that. We keep that basic human common ground that some of us might have found again. Go ahead, Alex.
On that exact subject, I had an experience this morning, and I think it really speaks to this because I think what we all have now is a sense of connectedness that we did not have a year ago at this point today. I mean, literally, on March 10th, a year ago, I think that as a species, we were way farther away from each other, metaphorically, of course, than we are today. I think there is this the sense of being all part of the same ecosystem. And this morning, I'm out here in the Poconos and got out and take the dog out for a walk in the backyard and whatnot. And I heard for the first time this year the geese flying overhead. And I heard those hummings and I thought to myself, what the hell is that sound? And I haven't heard that in a while. And also for the first time, I saw a little bit of grass, a little bit of green kind of peeking out from the massive amount of snow that we've had over the last 2 months. And I thought to myself, wow, it's here again. Spring is here. The earth is coming back to life. The geese are here. The grass is coming up. Things are coming back to the way they were. And it felt like this, wow, I can't believe how fast everything has gone. I can't believe that we're going to see the baby geese roaming around. I can't believe that it's all going to happen yet again. And now I think that there was this sense of me being so much more connected to the place where I am, the people that I'm around. And I did not have this last year or the year before, the year before that, or the year before that. And so I think you're right. I think there is going to be a change of philosophy and a change of mentality across the board, not just in any country, but across the world. And I do hope that you're right, Emmanuel, that we can maintain and persist this as a shared burden that we all went through together through 2020 and 2021.
Absolutely. And the thing that I think we also have to remember is that it's not over. It's still going on. 2,000 people a day are still dying. And while things are getting better, it doesn't necessarily mean that things are close to over. And it speaks to what we were saying before about stupidity. Texas today just reopened as if there is no such thing as a pandemic. You don't have to wear a mask. They put shopkeepers, bar owners, every merchant out there in a really bad place because the state no longer supports their saying you have to wear a mask to come into my establishment. No. You're on your own if you say that. You're the one that's got to get into a fight with some idiot that doesn't believe in science. The state will not back you up. That is a horrible thing. You know, the governor of Texas, Abbott, needs to be called out on this by all of us. And I'm not seeing enough of a reaction. That is the kind of thing that is going to prolong this agony for so many. It's literally going to cost lives. Whereas if, you know, there's a reason why airplanes, people travel by airplane. How come you're not seeing outbreaks from people traveling in an airplane? It seems like, you know, the worst possible place to be during a pandemic. It's because mask mandates are enforced. People wear the mask, and that makes a huge difference. It's been proven over and over again. Yeah, you don't like to wear a mask. Nobody does. But if it's that or death, I'll go with the mask. The mask is a better choice. And, you know, if we had all been wearing masks from the beginning, it would have ended a lot sooner. So, you know, let's stop being patient with these people. Stop saying, yeah, you've got your right to your opinion. No, no, you don't have the right to put all of us in danger because you're an idiot. I'm sorry, you just don't. First of all, Alex, we're going to get to you in a second. Do we have another call? No, we don't. Why don't we have another call? That's on you, Kyle.
Well,
you're handling the phone.
I was, I don't have the number. That was your part.
Okay, I'll read the number, but you received the phone call.
Next time all you can give me the number, and I'll be in charge of the number and the call.
If
but
you,
that's a lie.
If you
know.
Want Kyle to take the blame for this, folks, don't call. But if, you know, 802-321-4225 is the phone number. Just dial those numbers and talk to us. That's all we're asking. Go ahead, Alex.
On the subject of Texas reopening, which I don't agree with practically, philosophically, ethically, I think it's you know, a terrible thing. And I thought about this for a bit the other day, and one of the things that's reasonably foreseeable that could happen from Texas reopening is, number one, it compromises the entire world vaccine effort, because it's – it's a gigantic state without anybody wearing masks or any regard for normal precautions that we've all been taking for so very long. And if you don't keep your foot on the throat of this virus for an extended period of time, that's how it escapes. And number two, it could escape because it could conceivably create a variant of COVID itself. And my understanding is that the more COVID spreads from person to person, the more likely it is to mutate and create a dangerous variant. And how ridiculous would it be if a year or maybe even 2 years from now, there's the Texas variant or the San Antonio variant? You know, we wanted to, you know, call it the China virus. Now, the next iteration of this could very well be the Fort Worth virus.
Well, we didn't want to call it that. Certain people wanted to call it that, but what you say makes a lot of sense. I mean, so far, thankfully, all the variants are pretty much affected by the vaccine that we get. No variant has shown up yet that is not affected by that.
Yeah.
But and that could change. There could be a variant down the road that is immune from the vaccine. Imagine the horror of that. Now, that doesn't happen if the virus itself is wiped out. If there is no virus so that there is no variant of that virus, it doesn't happen. But if the virus is out there still because people aren't getting the vaccine or they're just ignoring science in various ways, then the chances of such a variant coming along are high, very high. And we could, regardless of having the vaccine, we could be going through this all over again. So we should be angry at these people. We should be really, really angry at these people for doing this.
And because this is happening on the exact, you know, on the precipice of herd immunity, it's the worst possible time for something like this to be going on in an entire state, especially the state, a state the size of Texas.
Are you in Texas? Listeners, are you in Texas? If you are in Texas, please call us. We want to know what's going on out there. 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. Or if you're in a state that is run by dumbasses that don't believe in science, we want to know how that's affecting your life. And we'll give you a few minutes, and then we're going to sign off if we don't get any more calls.
Or if you have an exchange server and you're having a very long, deep conversation with your server.
That too. Yeah, we were going to talk about that some more.
And debating removing it, or maybe it's already removed, and you know, you're contemplating the future of email in your organization.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, yeah, we'd like to know. Do we know anybody who's running Exchange? Do we run Exchange?
Oh.
Okay, I think we got a call. I'm sorry, Rob, did you have something?
I can wait if we've got a call.
We do have a call. Caller, go ahead. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi there. wanted to make mention on the mask mandate thing that in the Texas region, the Texas Attorney General threatened to sue Austin officials if they don't lift the local mask mandates, meaning businesses could be sued if they require their customers to use masks. I believe that's fairly insane.
That is insane.
It's passing the buck.
You know, this is how you keep a virus around, in my opinion.
And, you know, you have to wonder, do they want the virus to stay around? Is there some reason that they were, it goes counter to all your instincts.
I think it's just simply that there's too many people that, you know, this whole mask thing, it get whipped up into, oh, you're stepping on my rights versus, you know, your right not to be infected. And once it got to that point, it's some people treat it as, oh, it's my choice. I don't agree with that. I tend to believe the science.
And it's not just their choice. They're choosing for other people as well. Everybody that comes into contact with them, they are in danger. What gets me is you see all these outraged people in New York saying, how dare you tell me that I have to, you know, have my shop under restrictions. You know, the same mentality, but you see more of a reaction against authorities who are trying to do the right thing. And out there in Texas, I'm not seeing mass demonstrations. Of course, it probably wouldn't be safe to have a mass demonstration, but you know what I mean. People.
It's almost like a different world.
It is almost like a different world. I think people need to be a lot louder, a lot more offensive as far as standing up to this nonsense.
You know, but quite honestly, don't you think it's just common sense?
Yep.
I think humor goes a long way. And there will be some great ridicule, and I mean, businesses that have opened and had to deal with customers and being confrontational, they tend to reiterate their policy as many times as it takes to keep their business open and safe.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully there's that kind of statement.
How can we in New York help those companies, businesses in Texas that are fighting to stay safe and being thwarted by their own government? If there's any way we can help here in New York.
It's spiking the ball on the 10-yard line and saying, oh, touchdown. It's like, no, we got to keep going.
That's an analogy they might actually get. Rob, did you have something?
Yeah, I mean, of course, the other story around this was that there was a Mexican restaurant or a Mexican-owned restaurant that in Texas that decided to keep a mask requirement in place after Texas had dropped the requirement. And in return, people started threatening to call ICE and things like that on them.
Right.
Because as we're seeing now, this pandemic, it has so much ability to bring out the best in people. It also, unfortunately, is bringing out the worst in some people.
Wow. Any other? Oh, go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, the idea of penalizing small businesses in Texas who would require masks when ostensibly this is a Republican pro government pro economy. We want to support business, and that's the whole reason we're ending a mask, you know, mandate and ending the lockdown is for the sake of the economy. So to destroy small businesses in the name of the economy is just completely insane. It makes zero sense whatsoever from a policy standpoint, from an enforcement standpoint. You know, and moreover, the very idea that our response or attitude to a pandemic should be dictated by our politics, whether we're right or left, is just so insane.
Mm-hmm.
and such a horrible sign of the times and the echo chamber in which we live in 2021. I'm done.
So,
I'm going to drop off. Let somebody else call in.
Okay. Thanks. Go ahead, Kyle.
It just occurred to me. It was like it's an old play, right? It's the old narrative, the old playbook, and not actually what is being promoted and talked about as far as unity now and getting past this so that we can have normal economic activity. But it's that old narrative that they want to cling to show this allegiance and kind of wield the specter of the return doom and what we're supposed to be afraid of.
It's so misdirected.
Future.
I mean, Fauci is a Republican, isn't he? If people respect the science, I don't care about their politics. When I see people walking down the street, they're wearing a mask, you know, I support them and I feel proud of them, regardless of who they vote for. It's got nothing to do with that. I don't see how people ever go down this road in the first place. Go ahead, Rob.
While we're waiting for another call at 802-321-4225, that's 802-321-HACK, I just want to give a little shout. This past Saturday, Lou Ottens, the Dutch engineer who we audio engineers know was the inventor of the audio cassette, passed away, but he was at the ripe old age of 94, and you can't say that wasn't a good run.
You know, when I was a kid, I think 10 years old was when I got my first tape recorder. And that sort of started me off on archiving things. I'd walk around, I'd record relatives at family gatherings, and there would always be these little compact cassettes that came out. They all looked different, but they all had that logo on them. And it was magic to me. It was magic. On my 10th birthday, I demanded a tape recorder. That's what I wanted. And I just became a madman with it. Everybody would say, turn that thing off, don't record me. But always, always, years down the road, they were the ones that wanted to hear what they said. Anybody out there that wants to archive something, it's the best thing you can do. No matter what it is you're archiving, save it. Hold on to it. Because guaranteed nobody else is going to do it, and you'll be the one with the history. And you can share that.
You sound like an advertisement for the National Security Agency right now.
How?
You
know what I mean? How in the world is that NSA material?
You may want to hear what you said.
A 10-year-old walking around with a cassette recorder is NSA material in your world.
Sounds like a budding director.
I'm not talking about recording other people's conversations. I'm not talking about climbing telephone poles or anything. I'm talking about walking around recording, you know, your interactions. And there are many ways you can do that. It's, you know, email or, you know, YouTube, video, audio, all kind of radio, what we do. You know,
right.
By saving it all, but you can go back to it. You can learn from it. You can hear the differences. NSA. Good God. Yes, Gila, go ahead.
But you also get the family history, right? We have, my grandfather was an inveterate cassette recorder, and there are pictures of him recording baby me and baby my little brother while we were infants, just lying on a blanket, and Grandpa is holding out the microphone to us, and there are just tapes of us babbling as babies. There's a tape of me and my grandparents, I was two, having breakfast. And it is just this incredible recording of just a very mundane morning. But we have this, we have this history because of this little cassette recorder that my grandfather always carried around.
Your grandfather knew. He knew the importance of this. And while so few people get that and many are annoyed by it, it does matter, you know, saving things. And you can say, you know, everything is digital, everything is saved. It's not true. Things get erased. Things, you know, are unable to be accessed. Remember how long it took us to get our own voicemail recordings to play back. Thankfully, our listeners are able to help us with that. But it can be very difficult, and you can lose things digitally. You know, books, photo albums, they tend to stick around a lot longer than your digital collections. And it's not because the technology is faulty. It's because we don't follow through and we don't protect them nearly enough. It's very easy to get overwhelmed. Go ahead, Kyle.
I can relate with people not wanting to have you photograph them. I hear that in your story a lot. And I think that's part of what makes capturing that stuff and creating something, you know, composing an audio recording or something like that. It makes it, you know, work. It's worthwhile, but it still takes, you know, setting up a little bit or thinking about what you're going to capture and how to get it and not mangle the thing in the process and you know, have something worth looking back at. But the benefit is that you get this amazing kind of time capsule of what was going on around you. And
the biggest argument against me recording people at family gatherings is that I was wasting tape. You know, because tape was a tangible thing, and I guess it was expensive. But it's a good thing I did waste that tape, because I captured some real gems, some amazing moments. And I still have the tapes. I still have those cassettes. These are from the 1970s, and they still work. Of course, I digitized everything since. And, yeah, we should always combine the technologies, take the analog, digitize it, but hold on to the analog. They still work, and I'm amazed by that. And the same thing for my video collection. I don't have, subject my relatives to video cameras, but I did record a lot of things off television starting in the 80s. And unlike most people, I kept recording. I recorded the commercials as well. A lot of people turn the thing off when the commercials are on. They're the most interesting parts. You know, hearing or seeing car commercials from the mid-80s. There's so much there and so many other things, news breaks, you name it. So digitizing that is also important.
Yeah, I'm a strong advocate of mixing, going back and forth from one format to the other so that you have the physical as well as a digital. And the real advantage, I think, and it is not often realized, is the ability to search through, right? It's great that your albums are a print negative or a print of some scene or a video or an old reel of film, 8mm, 16mm, all that stuff stays, but it's very hard to look at quickly. But we have tablets, we have all these new modern ways to view things, and I think that's been really exciting that you can take stuff that's on the shelf somewhere, you know it's sort of in cold storage, but you can quickly flip through, reference the stuff, and then maybe, you know, in like proxies and smaller resolution stuff, but then go get maybe like a higher resolution copy and integrate, like Gila said, the sounds of cooing and kids, you know, kid talk. That could be integrated into new media that tells your family story. And there's all kinds of cool stuff going on with changing, colorizing as an example, but wasn't there something recently where you can add motion to
still? Oh my God, I've seen that. Basically you take a still image and all of a sudden you see that image moving, blinking, turning the head. I gotta tell you, you know, someone sent me a picture and I knew right away what it was. It was the spookiest thing. And can you imagine, doing that with people that have passed away? And that you only have still images of them. See, like Abraham Lincoln, for instance. Imagine seeing him start moving around and blinking and smiling. I don't know if I can handle that, but that's that's artificial. That's artificial, but it still is pretty fascinating.
My point is these different forms of media can all be components of a larger story that you're telling, and something that I think is important for memory, too, like your own memory of things, how your family remembers things and memorializes things, and how you think of your story, even identity. These are all parts that we can kind of pull out of a lot of this media that we've accrued in different formats. And I just want to also point out that archiving, it is work. It's a part of the work of producing the media itself, but it can be very therapeutic.
Absolutely.
Going back, looking at your history, like looking at those commercials, maybe you've since earned a sociology degree and you want to look at how ads shaped the way groups of people behaved over the years. You know, whatever. It's fascinating stuff. Mm-hmm. And going back, you can it can be edifying, but it can also be cathartic. And that creative thing of like sitting with your own history, it's like it's kind of daunting and kind of a lot, as they say, but it could also be this enormous source of inspiration and creativity and, as I said, building new art and memory.
Well, I want to make my video collection available for people to scan through. I have a couple of thousand tapes, and each one is between 6 and 8 hours long because I always use the slowest speed. The problem is, you know, if you try to upload that to YouTube, it immediately gets flagged because, my God, Google doesn't want you having, you know, this musical note that somebody is going to pirate, apparently, from a tape that's 40 years old. I need, probably through Internet Archive, a way that this can be shared and people can go through it and say, hey, this commercial is this is that actor when he was nobody, et cetera, et cetera. There's no way one person can do all that. It's digitized. It's ready to be uploaded somewhere. And, you know, a group effort. Crowdsourcing would definitely come up with some historic relics that I think would be quite fascinating. We can't get caught up in copyright issues, though, and all these restrictions that we're really good at imposing on ourselves. Just having this, I guess, evidence of something history that occurred, that we were witness to, being able to share that and add our own insight into what it is that is actually there, that's a valuable thing. I want to be able to do that. Hang on, Alex. We've got the phone number one more time, and we're going to stay on for a couple of minutes and until we don't get a call. And then we're going to sign off. 802-321-4225. 802-321-HACK is our phone number. We're on for a couple more minutes here on Overtime, and hopefully we'll get one more call. Good evening. I'm sorry, Alex. That's what I would say if somebody called in. I'd say, good evening, you're on. No, Alex, what's on your mind? Anything? Yeah, Alex, I think you're muted.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, there we are. I was about to say that I would love to see a way for that to be shared, you know. And on the one hand, look, there sometimes, you know, not all copyright claims are illegitimate, but when it gets in the way of this kind of archiving, and I think that, you know, there should be a reasonable way for you to assert very inexpensively on your own fair use to these types of demands without facing a huge amount of liability. Perhaps there's some kind of time carve out or something that should be made to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. But I mean, going back to what you were mentioning before and Kyle was mentioning, which is this notion of the digitalization of these memories. And Emmanuel, I think you said that you had inadvertently filmed a whole bunch of gems, right, during this all of this filming that you were doing.
Well, you're talking about videotape off TV?
Tape recording.
Yeah.
Or do you mean audio recording?
Or audio tapes, whatever you were filming. You know, without people's consent.
Yeah, well, I used... hold on a second. Let's be clear. The audio recordings were of relatives at family gatherings. And no, I didn't go around and get written consent from my grandfather. And no, it's pretty innocent. The video recording was strictly off television, commercial TV and non-commercial TV.
Over the air.
Over the air. And a lot of it is over the air, and you see static and things like that, which I find interesting too. You see car ignition static over, you know, who sees that anymore? I have station breaks of WNEW-TV. That's Channel 5 before they became WNYW, before they became Fox. Things like that, gems that you don't have anymore. And you can find some of it on YouTube, but I'm talking about massive blocks that I would like to be able to have other people look at as well.
I feel like it should be a really large, either really small or really large coordinated effort. Because
it has to be.
Another thing that comes to mind is like some of the institutions like communications museums and media museums. There's one I know in Chicago, mm-hmm. and all over at different institutions, I'm sure universities as well as nonprofits that just are interested in specific aspects of mass communications. And I think there's certainly, I don't know, just the over-the-air aspect alone, that's probably a whole area of research for all we know.
Absolutely.
Like, it's really critical that it's curated in a way that's accessible, that people can really dig into
it. But again, the quality is not perfect, and a lot of institutions demand perfect quality, and you're not going to get that. It's taped at the slowest speed, over-the-air, but there are things in there that I think would be fascinating. Alex, do you have something, a point to finish, because we have a caller waiting?
Say, you know, but, you know, much like yourself, Emmanuel, you know, with your filming without consent, the NSA also captured a whole bunch of gems, I think.
I am going to drive out there to Pennsylvania and tell you in person that I am not the NSA.
They're digitized, too. You can get them with a FOIA request.
We have a phone call.
This is a good time to go to the phones. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hi. I had a totally different question to ask.
Are you the first caller calling back again? That's the third caller?
Yes.
Okay. Well, boy, it makes us sound like we don't have any listeners. But, okay, go ahead. Make your point, but make it quick.
Okay. Well, you've got 29 people watching now, so it says.
Is that all? I thought we had thousands of people watching. Or not watching, but listening. It is YouTube, but whatever.
Well, they can always listen later as well.
True.
But there was this article they someone from Rikers by mistake. He's accused of having committed murder, but of course he's not been tried yet, so we don't know whether or not he'll be convicted. He has not been convicted. Something else, he had gotten 30 days and it was wiped off as time served, and they released him by mistake, mm-hmm. and he has prudently made himself scarce. Is there anything wrong with a person who hasn't been convicted of anything, who has been released, even if mistakenly, been released? They let him go with their trying to go where they won't be found.
Well, it sounds like a lot of the Capitol riot people might agree with that sentiment. Yeah, I'm not gonna comment on this. I mean, someone released by accident probably shouldn't be released.
A lawyer, do you not?
I'm sorry?
The gang a lawyer?
Yeah, Alex is a lawyer. I'm not sure if you want to take up this case, but go ahead, Alex.
I mean, look. On the one hand, I can see on the equities, hey, he was released, he can go, but it was by mistake, right? And I think, as Madden pointed out, you know, releasing somebody by mistake, well, that might be something you should be able to reel back in. But also, okay, let's say he's released, they made a mistake, maybe he should get the benefit of that mistake, but only until he's supposed to be tried. That he would still have to return to trial, right? I mean, otherwise, if you're released pending trial, you're released on your own recognizance or you've made bail, and you still have to show up to be tried. So I don't think he could, or should rather, be able to benefit from that mistake to the degree of never having to face trial again. He's going to show up just like anybody else.
Yeah. What was the crime that he's accused of?
Murder.
Oh, well, yeah, you know, that's kind of a biggie. I think maybe they should take a good look at whether or not they really want him walking around outside.
I'm sure there's showing of him for people to say if they've spotted him, show him with what looks like a really nasty injury on the side of his face. And so I'm wondering, how did it get there? He's been in prison for... he was in prison for at
well,
least.
I think you're answering your own question by saying he's been in prison. Bad things happen in prison. Absolutely. There's no question about that. That's a whole other issue. Anyway, listen, thanks for bringing that to our attention. Let's make room for another caller if they're out there, or if our listenership is plummeting even further. Our phone number, 802-321-4225. That's area code 802 exchange 321 extension 4225. 802-321-HACK. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, this reminds me of, there was a recent case, and I don't remember the details, unfortunately, but there were people who should have been released from jail being kept in jail because of a similar glitch. It just worked in the other direction. And one has to wonder, like, in which direction should these things fail? Do we want to risk having people who shouldn't be in jail locked up, or do we want to risk having people who should not be in jail, I'm botching what I'm trying to say here, but like, what's worse, having an innocent person behind bars or having a guilty person out in society? And this is a complicated question.
Well, not for me, it's a very easy question. I think having innocent people locked up is far worse than having a guilty person out. Because a guilty person is, you know, you can always catch the guilty person, but what do you do for an innocent person who's lost years of their lives? Or even months of their lives, you know. There's no way to give that back. You could be more at risk with guilty people walking around if you assume that every guilty person is going to constantly be on a killing spree. But I think that's overly simplistic. And I think, you know, it's far more dangerous for us to just accept innocent people being locked away than being, you know, missing a couple of people who should be penalized. Alex, I think you had something to say on that.
Oh, I was going to say, I entirely agree with that. I think, you know, maybe only Kim Jong-un would disagree with those kinds of principles.
I don't know why Kim Jong-un is the only one that people bring up. And almost any leader, I think, you know, is guilty of the same things. Maybe not to that extent, but, yeah.
You know, yeah, perhaps.
All right, we're going to give it another minute or so. It's getting kind of late anyway. We've been on almost a full hour, which is pretty long. And if no one else wants to call in, that's fine. There's no guilt or anything like that. I would like to see more people call. I'd like to see more people online as well. Maybe we should spread the word more somehow. 802-321-4225 is our phone number, and that's the last time I'm going to say that.
The final rule.
That is why we do this.
Oh, I had a non sequitur. I'm sorry.
Go ahead with your non sequitur.
Oh, no, I was just going to say the final rule for domestic hemp production goes into effect. This is the USDA's Agriculture Domestic Production of Hemp program, and it goes into effect March 22nd. So, yeah, this country makes hemp now.
Well, that's good news. It's also, as you said, a non sequitur, and we could talk for hours about that, and
I will talk about Outlook some more.
I know you will talk about it. But I think we're almost at the end of our
or we didn't talk about
energy level
here. The media using the word hacker.
No, we didn't. We could talk about that, but we've been talking about that for 30 years now. So
yeah, it seemed a little, like, you know, late for us to be covering that, since we cover it all the time. And nobody really asked our thoughts on it. I guess we've made them clear.
Yes, we have made that clear. There's no need to ask our thoughts. Okay, you know what? The time has come. We will not be taking phone calls at this point. We're going to sign off. And we're not going to be on next week. We're preempted. And we'll be back in 2 weeks, both for overtime and for Off the Hook. Any last words from anybody out there? Meaning you people.
Just keep them flying. Get your vaccines.
Yes, get your damn vaccines. Seriously. If you need advice or help, you can write to us, oth@2600.com. We can give you some tips on ways to get through the system. But it should start getting a lot easier. These vaccines are showing up. I think we're really turning a corner. Just be sure to urge everyone in your life to take this seriously, to get a vaccine, to not go against what science has proven, and to protect those people who might be in parts of the country or the world that are vulnerable because their leadership doesn't believe in science. If you look back in history, that has been how civilizations have fallen over the years, people doing stupid things. Let's hope we get through this. All right, so that's going to do it for us tonight. For Rob and Gila and Alex and Kyle, this is Emmanuel signing off. We will see you in 2 weeks. Good night.
Good night.